Welcome to another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Join us on our journey to tokenize the world. Let's roll. Hello, hello. Welcome back. Another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Today we have a special guest with us, Avery Bartlett. He is the master of vibes for social media for Ava Labs, aka Avalanche, and one of the leaders in RWA ecosystem, an L1 disguised as many different subnets and many different projects. We'll get into this, but welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks, man. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very excited you reached out. You know, I got a podcast of my own, so I love being the guest on these. You know, then I get to talk more than I already do. So
yeah, really appreciate the opportunity. We want to chat about that. We'll definitely plug the Answers to the Universe. So if anybody listening needs to jump in there and talk to Avery, he's had some great guests. So
appreciate
I guess,
that.
You know, first off, let's chat a bit about, I know that you have an interesting background. I mean, I know quite a bit about it, but I know a lot of my viewers and listeners don't. So, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey into crypto. I know that it wasn't the typical one, as most of them are, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I feel like everyone kind of has a goofy story. Or maybe it's not. Maybe they just like saw something on social media and got into crypto. But for me, it came in a few parts. So the first time I ever bought Bitcoin was in 2015. I was a freshman in college and I was trying to sell fake IDs. All right. At the time, okay, so I was 18. It's cool to sell fake IDs when you're 18, but then once you're 21, then it's not cool because then it's like you're doing terrorism. So that was just a quick little chip. So the first time I ever, and that was back when it was like really, really clunky, right? So I did that. I had like, you know, maybe Bitcoin was at like 700. Completely forgot about it. And then, you know, Bitcoin started hitting the news again. And I found the password to my Coinbase account. Coinbase has been around for a long time. And, you know, I was still in college and I had like $500 in Bitcoin in there. And like being a sophomore with $500, like you're a millionaire, you know, like you can, you know, do anything you want with $500 if you're, you know, I guess, you know, in college at that time. And so that just kind of starts forming, you know, the early understanding of what this technology is. I wouldn't say I was obsessed over it. Wouldn't say I was deep. Wouldn't say I got super in the rabbit hole. It's still very surface level. You know, everyone kind of gets into this space with that crazy dopamine hit of seeing, you know, the number go up or whatever, when you're super, super early. And then, a little bit later, I was a software engineer at the Home Depot. And during that time, it was right after college. It was my first job. I was a computer science major at Georgia Tech and did that. But I always felt like, you know, like there was more to life. You know, I felt like I had more potential and, you know, I was meant for something greater. And while I was really grateful for this job, I enjoyed it. Great people. Home Depot is a great company to work for. I felt like, you know, there was something else out there. And this is when I started getting really deep into crypto, right? This was around 2020, 2021, where it started becoming more in the zeitgeist of society. And so I started seeing it more in my Instagram, seeing it more in the YouTube videos, seeing it mentioned a lot more. And through just a barrage of contacts with it, I just got that, like, this is actually a really interesting moment. You know, I said it's more than just, you know, oh, it's like a new digital money, who cares? Like that's what people kind of first try and make the correlation when they first see crypto, but it's really not that. It's actually a terrible way to try and understand it, of this is just new money. That's not really the interesting part of it, and that's not really what it's trying to be. What it is a new way to describe value. And value is a very broad term, and I use it broad on purpose. Right. Value is in a bunch of different things. It's in ideas. It is in physical money. And that's usually what's transferred in between. But as the world's becoming more digital, and I know as like I grew up on the internet, a lot of people nowadays, a good portion of the population completely grew up on the internet. And we have a firm grasp of what value is outside of what you can see with your eyeballs. A lot of it's what you see behind a computer screen. And there is no really good effective way to describe that until now. And so that was what really kind of interested me in crypto and how I saw that you can kind of create a new internet that moves in a different way. And so I was like, I want to do something in this. And I didn't know what it was. And at the time, I thought I wanted to be a software engineer, right? I had spent, 7 years. My first job as a software engineer was the summer, my freshman year. My dad, shout out to him. I'm not going to take credit for this. He found like a small IT department in the government, FDEP, Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And I worked in this basement, just like doing any coding work they could describe, really making it up. And so that was like my first, experience being a software engineer. And it was fun. I loved solving problems. And then I continued working part-time pretty much since then. So honestly, although I was still young, I was like 24, I had like a decently long career as a software engineer. And that's what I thought I wanted to do. Yeah. So I started doing hackathons. I started doing bounties, crypto bounties. And I started learning how to develop this crypto tech and that and all that stuff. But I learned that I wasn't very good at it. So I would never win these hackathons and I would never be the first place in these bounties. But I kept trying because that's just what I do. And I also really got into the Avalanche ecosystem. I tried out a bunch of them. I tried out a bunch of different protocols, but I noticed Avalanche attracts a lot of engineers just because the architecture just makes so much sense. And if you think about things in a long time frame, it's very hard to imagine a lot of the existing systems can scale to, 4 billion users in 10 years. But Avalanche was designed a way where that's actually possible. So that's kind of what attracted me to it. Still very early, 2021, 2022 maybe. Let's go 2022. That was when this was. And then one day, I was on social media and I saw a post, not from any engineering department at Avalanche, but from the CMO, the chief marketing officer, Devin at the time, great guy. And he said, "Hello, if you have a friendly face, if you are good on social media, and if you like traveling, we'd like an on-site correspondent to go to all events all across the world and just to make fun content." And listeners are probably confused of like, why would you care about that? You were trying to be an engineer. Well, the other part of this story that I haven't mentioned yet is in college, I was sort of TikTok famous, right? I was a track athlete. I was pretty good. Good enough to get a shoe sponsorship once I graduated to train for the Olympics. And to get more money from said shoe sponsorship, I was like, let's see if I can get a lot of followers on social media, because then I'll just be more attractive to brands. And so started posting my workouts on TikTok. I started posting us at meets, the travel days, just what it was like to be a D1 athlete on TikTok. And people ate it up. They loved it. I grew an account to about, 100K followers, got, tens of millions of views. It was a lot of fun. It was actually like probably one of the most fun I've ever had in my life. Just because like being an influencer is cool, especially if you're in college age, right? Like the older you get, the less cool being an influencer becomes. So you want to get in real early. You don't want to
100%.
Don't want to be like going crazy on TikTok the older you get. So content matures, and I was doing very immature content at an immature time, and it was awesome. So with that combined with my technical experience of actually playing with the tech, I said, well, I actually understand the tech pretty well. And, I have this base. So he said, to submit it, just film a 1-minute video of yourself pitching. And so I knew how to edit pretty good on my phone. So I recorded on my phone, spun it up really good, sent it to him. 30 minutes after I sent it to him, he responds, "This is awesome. Let's talk." We met that Friday. And that Friday is when I put in my 2 weeks notice at Home Depot. 2 weeks later, I did whatever the inverse of being a software engineer at the Home Depot is. That's my current job. There's absolutely nothing in common. There's like zero overlap of what I used to do and what I do now. But I think marketing is really what I've meant to do. I'm interested in it. I think about it all the time. I absolutely love it. I love making content. Yeah. I love strategizing. I love talking about what I do. I love talking about RWAs. I love talking about crypto tech. And so I've really, really found what at the moment is my purpose. And so that's kind of my long-winded story of how I got into crypto.
That's brilliant. I mean, I've followed a lot of your content and I didn't know all of that. So that's good. Those are some good nuggets. So yeah. Yeah. No, it is. I think it's a brilliant hero journey of finding out, you know, kind of what, and I think, you know, like you said, a lot of people go through very similar stories, but I think, you know, they're all interesting in different ways of how it hits. So
for sure,
I think what's, you know, what I resonated with too, is just the fact that, I mean, I can tell from your enthusiasm and passion and just knowing your content. I mean, this definitely is the path that makes sense for you, clearly. But
I'm a lot better at it.
Yeah. And you, but working, supporting Ava Labs and Avalanche, you're still getting a kind of your cake and eating it too, so to speak, because, you know, you have one of the best engineered platforms, blockchains, you know, in the space. So clearly you still benefit from that, even though your day job doesn't necessarily, you know, involve the engineering side of it. So I think, you know, you still get to enjoy it and tell people about it, which is cool. So.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Although I don't use any of my tech lingo, in marketing,
right.
It is helpful that I understand this stuff to then make that conversion of how can I say this in as, you know, how can I describe this to a fifth grader, which is, you know, usually what you try to do when you try and reach big audiences.
Yeah. And I think why I see this such a, like what you're doing as so critical. And I think to your point, you hit on this, I think we're all realizing that the next wave of the future, so to speak, I mean, we're seeing it, we're living it, but what's being rewarded now was not what was being rewarded 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. Creativity, connections, community, you know, all these things that are squishy. You know, it's not the really tangible things. It was like, you know, hey, this is what you need to do 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And like I said, even 5 years ago, have moved very, you know, that needle's moved significantly. And what really does, you know, move the needle, you know, in the sense of growth and momentum and transformations is, you know, is this creative side.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can appreciate because I've spent a lot of my life kind of feeling odd, you know, being a bit creative in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think it's embraced more than ever. And, you know, you see that with NFTs, you see that with meme coins, mm-hmm. you know, meme coins are, you know, going completely crazy. And a lot of that, that's basically people allowing themselves to be creative, you know, and of course some of it's gambling, you know, but just in the sense of creativity, I mean, the amount of creativity that goes into meme coins is quite extraordinary. I mean, of course, some of them are terrible, but like there's just some of them that I'm just still blown away of just the creativity that goes into it. And the, you know, whether it's the art or the enthusiasm and the teams, and, you know, you bring people together from all over the world for these kind of things. So, and I know I'm diverting from RWA talk, but this all connects because ultimately that's what this is all about is like, that's what RWA and the tokenization space is it's bringing that real world and you know, having that digital twin of what's going on and living in the cloud. So
100%.
Yeah.
And kind of like, one of the reasons that makes my job so hard, but also kind of so rewarding is because, so if you were a marketer, let's say, keep the example 20 years ago for, you know, an upcoming technology company, let's say 20 years ago, it was phones or whatever, right? That I was trying to market phones. That would be a lot easier than what I'm doing now because you can see a phone. Like you can see the buttons and it's pretty straightforward that you just click the buttons that it shows you. It's like something physical you can see and you can play around with, right? But what we're going towards now is that the technology isn't getting built in the physical world as much as it was in the past. Like, you know, if I was trying to sell a car, it's pretty straightforward. You just look at a car, you know what a car does, and that's a cool innovation. But for this stuff, we've gotten to the point where we're not building on like the physical reality and laws of physics. We're building on ideas, right? We're building on, and like you keep saying, creativity and imagination and whatnot. And so the innovation is more so like what ideas can we come up with? And crypto really is just an idea. You know, it's not the only bounds of physics that we, you know, are holded by is like one, math, pretty straightforward. And the other one is how fast can the internet communicate all the way across the world, which is about half a second. And that actually does limit how fast crypto speed can go just because the internet just isn't fast enough yet for us to do what we want to do. And so just to your point, it's like the innovations are more coming or more cerebral. It's more like thoughts, like interesting thoughts, cool ideas. And RWAs, are the mix between the two, because right now they're separate. Like the physical and digital world are separate. The meme coins, what I'm trading ideas and I'm trading cool thoughts and I'm trading creativity, is completely separate from RWAs, and there's no reason they should be. They should be one thing that kind of is just one system, which makes sense, which we're working forward and we're doing.
Yeah, well said. I love that. I think to that point, I think maybe some ideas, maybe even some examples, if you have any, of things that you've been working on, or even Avalanche have been working on, as we kind of like maybe move into that segue, because obviously there's a lot we'll get into with what's going on in Avalanche. I know there's quite a few of your coworkers that, you know, obviously can speak to very specific projects, but from the sense of just overall, you know, I know you have a good handle on what's going on, and, mm-hmm. and particularly, like you said, social is bringing these components together, because at the end of the day, RWAs are the reason why this narrative is so strong, is because it's kind of a term that doesn't even have to be used, because at the end of the day, that's typically where everyone looks at, like, what's the real application to something? You know, that's been one of the biggest, you know, pet peeves of maybe mm-hmm. people that are kind of like, you know, friends or family we talk to about crypto or something. And they're like, well, what can you, like, they don't get the value of ideas or the value of creativity yet. Like, that's not,
which is fair.
Not wired that way. Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is where the RWAs and tokenization, and, you know, whether it's capital markets or real estate or collectibles, you know, all of these things are going to, this conversation will start still on social in many, mm-hmm. many cases.
Yeah. So I think a good entry point of, so we keep saying RWAs, and I'm going to go ahead and define that as, like, the term RWA stands for real world asset. It's not a perfect term, but it's what we're going with, right? It's like, it's a definition we're going with. And I'll basically describe that as something that has already existed and has a system behind it, but isn't on the blockchain. So let's take for an example, the most simple ones, homes. And I think one thing that has in common of the biggest argument towards throwing these items on the blockchain is to make these items more efficient. And the biggest hurdle that makes buying a house very inefficient is there's a lot of middlemen, and the middlemen exist because of trust, right? It's like, how do two parties exchange an exorbitant amount of money, a hugely personal thing about where you live? It's about the most personal thing you can do without, I guess, having a lot of safeguards that these two parties trust each other. And what blockchain does is it is just a decentralized system, which basically means nobody owns it, and that this is a battleground or somewhere that we can be, that I can exchange exorbitant amount of money with deeply personal things a lot more efficiently, because what we trust is, we trust the blockchain. I don't have to go through trusting the bank, trusting my real estate agent, trusting your real estate agent, trusting the person who's signing the mortgage, and all these different things. I could just trust the blockchain. And I don't think the current system is going to go away for a long time. There's, you know, real estate doesn't move too fast. And as I said, it's a deeply personal thing, and it's a deeply, you know, there's a lot of money in it. And so people are going to be very, very slow to change things. But one thing we've done with Homium, and this is kind of the first step, is tokenizing equity in a sense. So it's not like you can't buy a home on Homium quite yet, but it is a way that you can, that institutional investors who do invest in residential real estate, it is the largest asset class in the world. I forget the exact number, but it's gigantic. It's number one asset class in the world. So there's a lot of interest behind it. You know, you probably have a few buddies who, as their side hustle, invest in residential real estate. It's one of, like, the most popular side hustles is renting out. Yeah. So it's a massive industry, but what they're starting to do is, for institutional investors, tokenize the equity to make it a little bit more investable. And so that's pretty high level of something that we're doing on the home level, but it goes down a lot deeper. And one of the most interesting examples that not a lot of people talk about, which is the same, you know, the boring thing that we've done for thousands of years. We've done home, you know, residential real estate for thousands and thousands of years. Some people think that's boring. The other thing that blockchain solves, which involves a ton of trust, is insurance. Okay. And so why insurance? So the one use case is Lemonade, And what they're doing is they're insuring farms in Africa. It's a crazy sentence, right? But here's why blockchain makes sense here. Okay. So typically, if you were to get insurance on your car, you're going to have, you know, an insurance agent, let's just say, who's going to be in charge of your policy. They're going to make sure if anything happens, they'll do the paperwork, whatever, and get you your money. And it's pretty straightforward, right? It's just if something bad, they're paying you based on risk, and that hopefully that they make more than the chance that you get on a wreck or whatever. But if you're insuring farms in Africa, the premiums there of like the upside is like a couple bucks. It's just not scalable for a single person to look over these farms. And so what they're doing is they're using blockchain tech. So let's say I think there was an article of Eunice is a farmer in Kenya. And she has her corn farms, right? And the reason you would insure your corn farms is like if there's a drought, if it gets flooded, a million different things, if there's bugs, just a million different things can happen to your farm. But it's not a massive farm and you know, it's not a huge market. And so she would literally pay just 10 bucks to have her farm insured. And if anything happens, then she just gets the price of it. But it's just like, it's such a small market. So it can kind of only be tackled by trustless and scalable systems, which in this case is blockchain tech, right? The big pattern here is trust, right? Trust in a system that everyone can agree on, because that's just how these systems were designed. And
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean I've followed a few of these projects for sure, and I would do, just to note to a couple of things you've already said, is going back to Homium, I think they're doing it exactly right. I think to your point, I've spent a number of years in real estate and a founder and through multiple different aspects of running businesses, franchises. And I will say, like, I don't see a lot of this changing overnight, clearly, but home equity on the blockchain just makes perfect sense, because it doesn't require anyone to have that a lot of emotional ties to that. It just allows people to unlock some of their equity without adding to their, additional payments every month in most cases with Homium. And, they're able to provide another vehicle for investors to have some upside in a market they already trust and already invest in. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And to your point of Lemonade, I think that what's cool about that, I mean, we know, like, even in African countries, the corruption is so great that they're paying the insurance fees a lot of times, or the cost to move money, all of these things that we take for granted in our Western world, particularly here in the US, like, that's not always a luxury there, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I'm really and that's one of the things about emerging markets is I've noticed that a lot of crypto and like there's a direct correlation between interest in crypto and kind of where a society is in, I guess, maturing, let's just say. So for example, like when we were in Istanbul, couple months ago, I was rocking my Avalanche merch all the time, just dripped out in Avalanche all the time. I've never been recognized more just for wearing an outfit on, just for having crypto on me. Like in sometimes here it's cringe. It's like, oh God, a crypto, bro. But over there, they loved it. And the reason being is that their currency isn't rock solid right now, right? They're having some economic trouble. And like literally the week I was there, their currency lost 5% of its value compared to the US dollar. And that, I say that and it sounds crazy, but like that's devastating, right? And so a lot of people are turning to crypto rails. And it's not for, oh, hey, I'm going to use Bitcoin to buy coffee. A lot of it's actually the stablecoin. A lot of it's actually the US dollar on crypto rails. And so people aren't necessarily adopting crypto as a currency. That's why I don't like the word cryptocurrency, because it throws you off a bit. It makes you think that we're competing with the US dollar. But in fact, of what you see in practice is with these developing countries, especially in South America. I'm sure there's a bunch of different other countries, but in Istanbul, they were using it as a way to acquire the US dollar and send it pretty quick. And so that was kind of a unique use case that I feel like most people don't kind of, they underestimate with crypto is stablecoin right there.
Absolutely. I think another, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, but I know like Coachella is an interesting recent development with AVAX. And I think that, you know, that they just had, and it's very relevant because they just had a massive event that was one of the largest attended events. I mean, I saw like Sublime. I saw all kinds of viral videos going on. You know, so yeah, maybe you can chat a bit about some of those hookups. Like, you know, even Sports Illustrated. I think a couple of those are interesting.
Yeah, ticketing's a pretty interesting one. But to Coachella, this was just kind of just like an easy way to add value rails. I'll say that to activations, right? So if you think about like the way humans behave, and I'm going to zoom out really quick of how I'm going to tie all this in, but
maybe we should explain a little bit about what the Coachella, I think we probably.
Yeah. So it's questing.
Okay.
Yeah. So the cool thing there is, Coachella Canvas was with questing, and basically you download the app and they gave you different things to do. There were scavenger hunts within Coachella that you could go scan a QR code. And you would pretty much just get, you would level up. You would get experience, right? Just like an RPG, right? Just like a video game. And there were different activations, such as joining their Discord, following their socials, retweeting, blah 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 blah. And what they would get in return is collectibles. But also, if you get enough of them, if you get enough experience, you could have like gigantic rewards, such as like VIP access, as well as even like tickets to next year and bring a friend. So it's like actually like valuable stuff just for completing quests and doing things for engagement. And from a business perspective, the reason this is interesting is because like, obviously like humans act on incentives, right? To get people to behave and engage, you know, there needs to be an extrinsic motivation before there's an intrinsic motivation. When I say extrinsic motivation, basically something that comes from the outside world. Like there's a cool incentive of VIP access is an extrinsic motivation because I get that from somebody else. So that's where things start. Like if you, the first time you used Uber, you probably got like a free pass. It's like, oh, you can use it for free. The first time you used DoorDash, you probably got $20 free. That's an extrinsic motivation. So when you start doing these things, such as like joining the Discord or whatever, some of those people, I mean, everyone's going to start through extrinsic motivations, but the goal is of all businesses that then you then convert to intrinsic motivations, which is I am going to do this on my own accord. And I think the Discord is probably one of the most interesting parts because that's essentially just like spending time in the community, right? Talking about your different artists, whatever. And maybe you make a friend, and whenever you make a friend, you're more likely to come back to the Discord and you're probably going to tell about it. And then you kind of become sort of acting on the best interest of the festival. You know, you'll start, if you're in that Discord a lot and talking to people, learning about things, something interesting comes out, you're going to tell your in real life friends about it. And that network effect, if you can hook somebody with an extrinsic motivation, such as questing, such as doing these QR codes, such as joining the Discord, and then convert them to actually enjoying and liking your community, they can kind of be an extension of your user acquisition funnel. So that was an interesting thing with Coachella. I know I went super businessy there, but that's just kind of how my mind works. I feel like no, it's more perfect. Interesting. That's, you know what I mean?
No. I mean, that's kind of the MO of most of the listeners so far, at least, you know, if I had a persona.
Yeah.
So I think that fits perfectly. And no, I agree. And it you know, that was trending on OpenSea for a few weeks, you know, kind of leading up to their event and different mm-hmm. things. So I mean, really got some good press, and you know, and we're seeing more brands go this way. We saw this in that 2021 era and into 2022, and then obviously think we all know what happened with a few years of bear market activity.
Right.
There really wasn't any real activations, but we're seeing quite a few of those either reactivations or doubling down on their activations, or brands that already had these ideas mm-hmm. that are finally bringing them forward. And that another example, of course, is a Sports Illustrated, where they mm-hmm. moved over to Avalanche, you know, to basically refresh their NFT, you know, connection between their
yeah
you know, the real world applications and NFTs, which is cool. So
it is very cool. And Sports Illustrated, you know, it's it's ticketing. They have a bunch of events, but we have a bunch of ticketing platforms on them. The interesting thing about that is I feel like in 2021, the pitch of ticketing was, oh, hey, you know, you go to a game, you have your ticket, and then if it's a cool game, maybe you can resell your ticket. I don't think that ended up being like the most engaging part of NFT ticketing. No. So from being a software engineer, one of the tricky things about using databases, and databases you can think of just an Excel spreadsheet, just a grid, a column, a table, something that you have, you know, descriptors, and then you have stuff that's filled in with numbers. Databases are really bad for something like ticketing, for an example, because you would have, okay, this ticket, and then it would be who it belongs to. And then you would have to keep a record of, okay, if it's transferred, then you have to create a new database of where it's at and then have a pointer linking back to it. And if it's transferred like five times, you need to add five more columns saying this is pointed, this is pointed, this is pointed to. Long story short, the blockchain actually makes this a lot more straightforward and actually makes it cheaper and more streamlined to just have tickets, right? I don't know. I did my best to explain that. I don't know if that made sense, but
I agree. And I know, like you said, ticketing, the aesthetics of, or the pitch of how NFT ticketing is going to be, you know, this huge windfall of people wanting to buy these tickets, you know, now online because they're NFTs, hasn't fully panned out. But no. I do see, and I have talked to some projects, not on the podcast yet, but some that I'm lining up. Uh-huh. That are in the collectible space, mm-hmm. You know, and you made a video recently on social just talking and comparing this to Pokemon cards. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I do think collectibles, you know, we're seeing where this does make sense in a lot of ways. You know, I think certain things where it's a ticket, unless it's a really rare, very sought after event, it's probably not going to be something that has a resale value. Although it is a digital collectible that is a little easier to, you know, aligns more up with what we would appreciate collecting these days. Like a lot of times you don't want to have it go collecting dust somewhere else. It's like, hey, I'd love to just have it in my wallet.
Yeah. Unless it was right. Unless it was like a super rare legendary event. Which I'm sure there's maybe some resale, but yeah, the primary use case, and maybe you can attach collectibles to it. You know, maybe there is a twist on it where you add some art or just some sort of extra value that kind of augments the ticket to make you want to collect it more.
When I think where
maybe there's that. Yeah,
I agree. But I think to your point earlier, and I think really where this is all going is it's not about, like, as we know with most of these things, it's very easy at first to look at everything on the face value and say, okay, Bitcoin is money. And you know, it's more than that. And all these things are more than what they appear. 100%. And this is a perfect example with tickets, because tickets are just step one into those breadcrumbs, those online breadcrumbs of what people are doing. It's by giving those external incentives that are aligning then with future internal incentives, but also can align with future rewards. And this is where I think, you know, whether people love it or hate it, I've spent a lot of time trying to convince myself it's not going to work on the blockchain, but rewards and point systems are still going to be something. And in fact, they've been mostly a failure in Web2. So I think there's a lot of reasons, you know, projects that I've talked to have convinced me that rewards and point systems and aligned incentives actually are going to work much better in Web3, where a lot of people have said, well, you know, only 90% of incentives aren't redeemed, you know, and it's like, they give you this stat that you're like, wow, that's pretty crappy.
Yeah. But
Web3 has so much more potential because of all of the things that you can connect up to it.
And I would argue about like the rewards as being actually, this isn't a prediction, more of like a trend we're seeing now in like the, you know, the true crypto degenerate culture that will only get bigger. So almost every single app, basically every single app has a point system. All right. And people, I've never seen people go crazier over online points than I see in crypto. Just because usually these points will convert to, you know, you'll get a token. And as we know, tokens can go crazy. Yeah. And I think the difference that reward points in Web2 and aren't as good as reward points in Web3, just because value, the value of this point is has so many steps to get to, whereas value in Web3, it's in the same wallet that you keep all of your stuff, right? Right. It's one singular place to hold all your stuff. I can't hold, like, I can only hold the US dollar in my bank account. If I want to, if I got a bunch of Subway points or whatever, and I wanted to convert, and if I didn't want to buy a sandwich, I want to convert that into money, too bad, right? But in crypto, let's say Subway points were on crypto, and I would accumulate those. That's just like, I know what that is. It's clear. It's not like, well, if I do five, then I get a free sandwich, blah, 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 blah. It's just like value that I have in my wallet, which is the same, my Subway points are in the same place that my gaming points are, which is in the same place that like my collectible items are, which is the same place that my tickets are. It's value all in one place. Whereas yep. in Web 2, value's all over the place. And sometimes you even forget about it. And well, most of the time you forget about it because that's what statistics say. And so I think yeah. reward points, it's not even a prediction. It's happening. And I'm after this, I'm going to go farm on Stars Arena to get more points because I know that's going to be a good thing for me.
Yeah, that's. I haven't listened to your most recent episode. You had Jason on there from Stars Arena and the founder, right?
I'm excited about that one.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And I think to your point, I think it's almost like the points reward system is comparing like a rotary phone to the iPhone. Like the 100%. Rotary phone was one thing. Like, you know, the iPhone opened up the door to apps, to so many different levels of communication and banking and you name it, payment mm-hmm. systems. So it's really just these rails for incentives. And as you mentioned, I mean, there's sites like Whale Market and some of these ones where literally you could sell your points. And like you said, in some cases, in many cases these days, because of intrinsic incentives are part of our the ramp up of this market we're in right now, mm-hmm. that it does turn into some kind of token airdrop potentially. So yeah. you really, you know, people treat incentives and points in a much different way than they do in Web2. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. And I guess kind of like the I guess I don't want to segue for you, but I think this kind of goes right into gaming in a way.
No, we're it's a good time to go to that. Let's do
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. So this is actually where I think Avalanche is the strongest in gaming. And the reason is the big exciting thing, the differentiator of Avalanche for those who aren't listening, is the concept of subnets, which basically means anybody can create their own blockchain that they manage using Avalanche technology, and it's within our ecosystem. So a lot of the times you think of a blockchain, you think of just a single network. Like I can use Ethereum and I have all my stuff on Ethereum. I can use Solana and I have all my stuff on Solana. Avalanche has the C chain, which is a lot of the time what people do. It's like our central hub is where we hang out. But next to that, just in parallel, are dozens and dozens and dozens of blockchains. A lot of those are gaming blockchains. So Shrapnel, for an example, owns their own blockchain, the Shrapnel subnet. And what powers this subnet is Shrapnel's token. So a big reason why people use subnets or they own their own blockchain is for tokenomics reasons. So basically, they can have a token that has actual value accrual based on usage and isn't just, you know, they don't do a bunch of mental hoops to try and create value for a token, which a lot of the times people do and fail at. But they go to subnets. And why do games care about subnets? Why do games want their own blockchains? Because although this is a super early industry and we really haven't, you know, we're still experimenting a lot, one of the things that is guaranteed to throttle a network and to override a singular blockchain has been gaming. So if a game, so let's just say, you know, you're trying to use Trader Joe at DEX, you're trying to just like swap USDC for Avalanche, but at the same time that a game is super, super, super popular, the network's going to get clogged up and your fees are going to be, you know, the transaction's going to be slow and you might have to pay a lot in gas just because there's so much demand for block space. You'll have to pay a lot of gas for that trade. Games have already proven to be able to throttle a blockchain time and time again. Games can throttle a blockchain. So what do? You go onto your own blockchain. And so we see dozens and dozens and dozens of games who have their economy built on the blockchain, and they have incentives, extrinsic incentives for people to create content for their game. So there's two interesting things about Web3 games, right? There's one, the tokenization of their in-game assets. So as we've been talking about in this podcast, if you have a good enough idea, whether that be a cool Fortnite skin or a cool collectible, in this day and age, that has value. Imagination has value. So if you're in it, and it can't, it's not valuable because it's NFT. It's valuable because you're creative. So people mix that up. So if you have a good enough game and a good enough items, you can throw that on the blockchain, and it's just a much more efficient way to have an ecosystem and have a transfer of value for a million reasons. A lot of games are doing that. The other things is this trend in macro gaming, like out of Web3, called games as a platform. What does that mean? That means something like Roblox or Fortnite, where so you have your game, you create some content, but the majority of the levels, the majority of the skins, the majority of the mini games are created by your player base. It's with the assumption that, you know, 1 million 15-year-olds have a better chance of creating a super awesome level than like your game studio of 200 people, right? So it's just like outsourcing fun ideas. And blockchain is a huge way to facilitate this and actually reward people. Because right now, if you're going to make a fun mini game on, for the most part, let's just say on Gary's Mod or something like that, you're not going to get paid anything at all. There's no way to monetize it. But if there's a way to monetize players creating content for your game, creating skins for your game, and having really, really good ideas, it's possible that if you're a good enough game designer with no experience or whatever, just through the capitalism and the laws of supply and demand, you will get paid by this game for creating content. And crypto is great rails to facilitate users creating content. So it's one big thing MapleStory is doing. That's one big thing Shrapnel is doing. And I think it's a very, very awesome trend. So that's why I'm so excited about gaming.
Yeah. And you had a post that talked really, really well to this topic of with graphics. So make sure you follow Avery on Twitter or LinkedIn. You know, I think I saw it on both platforms, but it talks about that network effect. And I think where subnets are different, and we can talk a little bit more about that too in capital markets as when we finish up gaming. But what's interesting, and you pointed this out, but I just want to reiterate for people listening about this that aren't familiar with subnets on Avalanche, is that these independent blockchains aren't exactly the same as an L2 on Ethereum, because these are all going to be operating off if they wanted to, they could choose to use AVAX as the gas token. But for the most part, the reason why they want their own blockchain, as you mentioned, aside from the fact that it's game and it's going to be a heavy load on the ecosystem, they're able to have their entire own blockchain, but they're also able to use their tokenomics for the entire blockchain. So it is literally their own blockchain. They're not an L2 of Avalanche, even though they are, you know, there's a lot of synergies and obviously with Teleporter and some of the other things, we don't have to get all too geeky on it, but some of the ways that subnets can communicate together back to the mothership, back to other subnets, and even to other blockchains, like, you know, back to Ethereum, over to other places. Mm-hmm. So, but I think I don't want to jump too far ahead of gaming, because I know there's so many different things there. I don't know if there's other things you wanted to point out. And obviously there's Beam, which is, you know, $1 billion market cap. Mm-hmm. Ecosystem that not everyone realizes that, you know, that's an Avalanche subnet.
Yeah. And I think I think Beam's a great example, because like, if you really put your ego aside, like the goal of Avalanche is just to make other people successful. So and I'm going to just be blunt here. You want to get other people rich. You want to use your technology without your brand name that they're not relying on, because cool comes and go. You won't be cool forever. You can't rely on just being in the hot narrative, because everyone gets their time in the sun and everyone's going to be second place and forgotten about. That's going to happen. The value has to be real. You have to genuinely provide something that makes other businesses make more money than you. Because what happens when you do that, such as Beam, they're enormous success, right? They're a blockchain that's doing, but I'm not saying they're doing better than the Avalanche ecosystem, but I'm saying that's our goal. Our goal is to make the subnets be as powerful as possible. Because if they're successful, A, we're going to do business with them forever. So they're going to be part of the ecosystem forever. They'll always stay with Avalanche if they're successful.
Right.
And they're going to tell everybody else, and they're going to set a stage of like, okay, that's the model we're going to go off of. And so it's just a big network effect. And so the goal of subnets is very, very like we're trying to get other people to make the best blockchains as possible. We don't necessarily even need to be involved. We just want to provide as much value to other businesses as possible. And so that's why we're literally giving people their own block space and their own, you know, throughput and their own ownership and their own gas token. Yeah. Because if we only cared about Avalanche, we would make everyone use our gas token. But Beam is a fantastic example of someone who can really crush and be successful as a subnet.
I agree. And I think, you know, I don't know, it just came to me, and there's plenty of good examples of to tie this in, but you know, it's like you think about like Y Combinator. It's like Y Combinator, it's like Sam Altman taking credit for every company that came out of Y Combinator and saying like, you know, you need to partly name your company Y Combinator, or always mention us in every, you know. And I think that's where Emin, you know, his vision and all of you guys on the team is, it's very much the same way. I mean, mm-hmm. you guys, the clear path has always been put builders first. You know, we're going to put the engineer, we're going to put in place what builders want and where the puck is going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, of course we're going to take some accolades and we're going to point a few, you know, point, hey, we're involved in this, but, and naturally people are seeing that. I mean, there's a reason why the number one coin on CoinMarketCap for RWAs is Avalanche, just because it's a multi-layer narrative. Like if you're mm-hmm. looking to invest in, if it's the RWA niche is too confusing. And this conversation is a good example of not being confusing, but just of how dynamic it is and how many different layers and how much is going on, that Avalanche is probably one of the top players, if not the top, in the sense of, and with people are voting with their dollars, I mean, based on the market cap and based on the RWA rankings, Avalanche is where people are putting their money because they see that, you know, and it's mm-hmm. natural. So clearly that's working, which is great.
Yeah. 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 And you know, we're super proud of it, but you know, you know, the reason we got here to begin with is because we were never satisfied. So, you know, we're trying to do as much as we can and, you know, hopefully do the best in every single vertical. So, yeah. You know, we're excited.
I think so a lot of the listeners love the capital market stuff. I mean, BlackRock, Larry Fink, you know, this is a hot topic these days of tokenization of capital markets, you know, the traditional yes. markets. I know Morgan on your team is the director of this and, you know, involved. Mm-hmm. And I think she's in Dubai maybe right now, or
she's in Dubai, flooded in her hotel, you know, but yeah, yeah, she's doing great stuff there. She's a beast. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on in the, I guess, you know, institutional finance. One thing I will say is, to no surprise, similar to real estate, this is one of the slower moving verticals, right? Like people who have all this value, you know, the financial giants, you know, JP Morgan, Citibank, it took a long time to get them to open up to the idea of taking some of their, you know, different verticals or different parts of their business, which are essentially just having large funds and converting them into RWAs in the blockchain, or tokenizing some funds to use, you know, crypto tech to distribute value and do all sorts of stuff. It took a while, but right now, what JP Morgan, Citibank, and T. Rowe Price, a lot of KKR, a ton of huge financial players, is they're playing around with the idea of essentially, so they're not changing the asset itself. Like the asset itself is going to be the same. Their funds aren't going to change. But as you know, there's a lot of trust involved when moving these assets around from different players, organizing them in different ways. Blockchains are literally built to solve many, many problems that they have, because a lot of the traditional systems that that are on Wall Street that run our financial system. They were built, you know, decades ago, and they aren't written in the most up to date code. It's just mainframes that still work. Yeah. You know, which is fine because you know if it works, you know, that's fine, and they know where it is, and it's been reliable. But what comes next? It's very straightforward. It's going to be the tokenization of assets, and it's going to be a long journey to get the entire ginormous vertical of institutional finance to get fully on board. But making ginormous steps to have them play around the tech. They have their blockchain. They're tokenizing some of their funds to make transfer between different players a lot easier, and a lot of that's facilitated with Avalanche subnets because they can be private as well. I talk about, you know, you can own your own subnet. You can also own your own subnet and it be private, and you just have it within your own rails, right? Which is usually what a lot of them are doing, and it's a pretty interesting application, and it saves them a ton of money, and it makes things a lot more efficient, and it takes out a lot of middlemen just because the trust is already solved.
Yeah, I agree. And I've read some of the case studies, and the JP Morgan Onyx program is a perfect example of that test where they did that with a private blockchain. They tokenized funds, and they're able to even, like we mentioned a little bit earlier, just the term teleporter, where you're able to communicate privately back and forth to the mothership. So even to like the Web2 mainframe systems or what, you know, their existing database systems. Or even if they were settling, say, for example, like they were going to settle on the BlackRock tokenized fund, for example, like, you know, that's not anything related to this case study, but teleporter makes that possible now, where you could literally have your tokenized funds. And then if you're looking to settle into USD or USDY or something, they could teleport that directly back over to another blockchain,
yeah,
which is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that deal was done before Teleporter was out. So I think they're using layer zero. Right. But I think to speak on that point of like the vision. So Teleporter is basically, so I talked about you have all these separate blockchains that are just right next to each other in the Avalanche ecosystem. What is a secure way to have these blockchains be able to talk to each other, or in the most basic form, be able to transfer assets from one place to another? And so that is Teleporter's been a huge task. Is historically, for if people don't know, taking assets cross chain is, you know, from let's say Ethereum to Solana or Polygon to Avalanche is one of the scariest things you can do. It's not a perfect system. There's a lot of hacks, and so to make something that is both secure, works, and really, really fast is actually a big task, and we're super proud to be ahead of the curve on that. And Teleporter, it's still early. There people are still building on top of it, but it's really what's going to make all these separate blockchains feel like one. And so when I talk about that vision of you just have one wallet and you have all your stuff, and you don't have to keep track of your Subway points and keep track of your bank account and keep track of, you know, maybe you have a different thing for a credit card. You don't have to keep track of all these different stuffs. It'll just be kind of like your phone connects all these different apps. It'll be Teleporter and Avalanche connects all your value. And I use value on purpose because it's a very, very broad term. It can mean anything. Right. It can mean anything from the art you collect, the games you play, your reward points, to your net worth. So anything.
I love it. Well, that's a good. I mean, I think we hit on most of the things. What did I miss? Is there anything that we didn't capture? I mean, I know there's still a lot of projects. I know one thing I was going to mention there's a ton, and I think I'll have them on the show too. But another one is, to your point of insurance. Like, it was just something on my timeline and something I would check out today. But reinsurance, RE. You know, they go by RE. They're also an Avalanche project, and it's similar to like a Lloyd's of London. Anyone that knows that story, I think it's a fascinating way they're building that project, where they're essentially tokenizing, or they're using the Avalanche decentralized system and the blockchain rails to create their own Lloyd's of London marketplace, essentially, where, decades and decades ago, that was just a bunch of rich men that got together that literally sat at a coffee shop and figured out how to insure the maritime ships that were going back and forth and if they were going to make it or not. And this is something that now has moved, obviously, in many decades forward to something like with insurance, which is almost a two, I don't know, it's like $2 trillion business, just one aspect of that reinsurance business. So, you know, some of these projects that are coming on chain now and bringing these real world applications, and to your point, they're able to talk back to some of these legacy systems or even other blockchains for a settlement layer or for even just transfer, you know, even a transfer of ownership in some cases. So I think there's some exciting things, and I think we hit on a lot, but I like to always keep these close to an hour just because everybody can only take so much of us jabberjawing, right? So
it was a great conversation. I think that was a great point on Re. I think I need to talk about them more. I feel like it's been a while since we posted about them, but
I'm working on getting them on the show. I've connected up with a couple of team members.
Oh, good. But yeah. Good. They're good dudes.
Yeah.
Awesome team. Well, hey, man. Thanks so much for having me on. This is a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. This has been awesome. I think this will be eye-opening for anyone that's not, you know, already geeking out on the Avalanche blockchain, because there's a lot, especially in this market with things heating up, there's just so much to take
there
in.
There is.
And I think this hour session here is gold for understanding, you know, just what's going on at Avalanche and mirroring to what people are hearing about, Avalanche and RWAs, but that not everyone really understands what's under the hood. Like we talked about, we keep bringing back to this, everyone's looking at the surface of what's happening. I think we unpacked a lot of that, which is good. Thank you.
I hope so. Yeah. And I did my best to explain things. I know it's some complicated stuff, but I really appreciate the opportunity. And for all the listeners, feel free to DM me on any platform, Avery Bartlett. I'll do my best to respond, answer any questions.
Yeah, definitely follow Avery, follow Avalanche, follow the Ava Labs teams. And definitely I'll have you back as we have more developments and new things to talk about.
Can't wait. Awesome.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Real World Assets Show. Thanks for joining us on our journey to transform the future of finance, one asset and token at a time. For more insights, visit us on the web at rwa.builders. I'm Travis John, and I'll see you on the next episode.